You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Don Guerra. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, November 14th, 2016.
There's this idea that refugees are going to come in here and they're going to impose Sharia law and we're all going to be terribly oppressed by the Muslim minority. I really hope that you can see through that.
Grassroots conservatives collaborated with Bloomington Refugee Support Network in hosting a forum last week on the resettlement of refugees to Bloomington. More on that coming up in today's Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, an organization aimed at supporting local entrepreneurs. That's on Activate, our weekly segment, spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Bloomington and Indianapolis both saw protest activity over the weekend in reaction to Donald Trump's victory in the presidential election. A rally held at the Sample Gates on Sunday, billed as Community Defense and Resistance, drew between 100 and 200 attendees. The event was sponsored by the Indiana Recovery Alliance and several other area groups, including PRISM, Students Against State Violence, and the Indiana NAACP. Also participating were several local social service organizations, including Mother Hubbard's Cupboard and the Shalom Community Center. Around 15 organizations sent spokespeople to the event, according to reporting from the Herald Times. A central theme of the rally was fear of what a Trump administration will mean for members of marginalized communities. Representatives of PRISM, a youth-focused LGBT inclusion group, expressed fear of progress being rolled back by regressive policies, and advocates of rights for undocumented immigrants spoke against Trump's plans for mass deportation and the revocation of deferred action by President Obama. The other theme of the rally was solidarity, with calls to donate to and support organizations like Planned Parenthood and the Indiana ACLU, as well as rallying for the defense of Bloomington's minority populations. The event was further galvanized by news of racist pro-Trump graffiti in the Bloomington area, including KKK tags and swastikas spray-painted along the Beeline Trail and Heil Trump sprayed on the side of a church in Bean Blossom, also accompanied by a swastika. Several reports of racist actions by Trump supporters also appeared on Facebook, although WFHB has not independently verified those accounts. Indianapolis saw a much larger protest Saturday afternoon. The Indianapolis Star reported that a crowd of 500 marched on the state capitol, but supporters claimed the crowd was in excess of 2,000. While the Bloomington event focused more on solidarity and community action, the Indianapolis protest was billed exclusively as a Trump resistance rally. The Facebook page called the Trump campaign, quote, the most wretched presidential campaign in American history, unquote. 2,800 people on Facebook claimed to have attended the event. This audio was recorded Saturday afternoon at the State House.
No!
The protest turned more contentious later in the evening. Seven were arrested after an altercation with Indianapolis police. An IMPD spokesman claimed some protesters threw rocks at police officers and accused four of the arrestees of being out-of-town instigators. All seven were reported to be released as of Monday morning. IMPD officers were reported to have used pepper spray during the incident. The protest was otherwise reported to be peaceful. A small number of Trump counter-protesters were on site, including a truck sporting pro-Trump signs that circled the protest for a period of time. Anti-Trump protests were held in cities around the country over the weekend, with the largest events occurring in Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C.
The City of Bloomington's Public Works Department has announced the downtown recycling center will be closed by the end of this month. The facility, which is located in a parking lot adjacent to the showers complex, serves as a public drop-off site for recycling. The owner of the facility, Chad Roeder, says the closing is primarily due to impending development, namely the city's Trades District project.
My understanding is the city is going to require the space for future development, and I don't know what that means, but that's what I was told. My guess is that they're, you know, probably have got some ideas concerning Tech Park development, which is has been a fairly large initiative on behalf of the city for several years now, and I can only speculate that perhaps there are plans afoot to utilize that parking lot, which is part of the, I believe it's a three-phase development process, which includes the property directly across the street, across 10th Street, and then the sort of the lot to the west, the northwest of our facility, and in that entire parking lot where we currently reside. So I was told that it was due to impending development.
The Downtown Recycling Center was initially created as a public-private partnership between the city and Bloomington Pedal Power, a business owned by Roeder. They were given use of the parking lot next to the showers complex free of rent, and in exchange operated a public drop-off site for recycling in addition to their existing operations as a private recycling pickup service. Bloomington Pedal Power has ceased to function as a commercial operation, and for the past 18 months, the Downtown Recycling Center has been a strictly public service. Roeder cites this as one of the main reasons that relocating the center would be virtually impossible.
Pedal Power has since essentially ceased to function as the hauling service, and so for the past 18 months or so, the facility has been strictly a public amenity with the commercial element has been removed. So, considering the value of downtown real estate and the fact that the facility really doesn't make any money, it's really an impossibility for us to consider moving elsewhere. And the city did not provide an alternative space on city property for our use. So that is why it's looking pretty bleak at this point.
The recycling center's clients include many downtown businesses, as well as city facilities, schools, and residents who live in apartments that don't have recycling pickup service. In the city's press release, Mayor John Hamilton praised Roeder and the center's volunteers and interns for keeping hundreds of tons of recyclable materials out of the city's landfill. With the closing of the downtown center, the nearest recycling drop-off point for downtown residents is now the district's main location on South Walnut Street, near the Monroe County Animal Shelter. A complete list of drop-off locations for Monroe County can be found at gogreendistrict.com.
Last week, the Bloomington City Council gave conditional approval to a rezoning request that clears the way for high-density student housing complex to be built at 405 East 17th Street. The approximately 6-acre parcel currently houses the Dunhill Apartments. The new complex will include 746 bedrooms and 4,000 square feet of retail space. The council approved rezoning the area to allow for the new complex. The council is requiring the developer, RCR Properties, to market the housing complex to graduate students, not just undergrads. Residents of the nearby Garden Hill neighborhood have complained to the council about the noise, violence, and parking issues they experience from the area's existing student housing. Bob Baird is a resident of that neighborhood.
In our homes, properties, and indeed our lives in Garden Hill, that we wouldn't trade for any in Bloomington, we would appreciate that 17th Street be considered the dividing line between the hoopla of IU, sports, and our historic neighborhoods. Is that too much to ask?
Council member Dave Rollo said he was sensitive to the neighbors' concerns. He says additional security and oversight is needed.
The dilemma, of course, is what's been described by others, and that is that we can expect IU to continue expanding, adding 300 students per year. This is externalized onto the community. We can appeal to the university to add housing. However, we can't compel them to add housing. And so, in a way, what we're experiencing is reactionary, but we can, I think, guide development.
Garden Hill residents have also complained that they are overrun with students parking in their neighborhood. The development will provide more than 500 parking spaces. Councilmember Chris Sturbaum said he thought that with that amount of parking, some of the spillover into the Garden Hill neighborhood will be relieved.
I do think that this is an appropriate and a realistic project. It is big, but the old underlying zoning was in a different context. And this is kind of a one-of, and that's why it's in front of us. So I'm seeing that clear borders. I think always these neighborhoods have to defend their borders. And this is a clear 17th Street border. And I really think these people they have plenty of parking. Like the Smallwood people, they just come in and out of their property like a bat cave. So I don't think it's going to be the kind of problem that you imagine. And we can't undo the situation that you're living in, but it can start. The more that we build as far as getting demand met for apartments relieves the rental pressure in your neighborhood.
The council is also requiring any landscaping to include native species.
An organization dedicated to preserving the bonds between homeless people and their pets is holding a one-time event at Shalom Community Center this weekend. The organization My Dog Is My Home aims to provide free services for companion animals of the homeless. Free basic veterinary care, animal care supplies, and dog and cat grooming will be offered. Animal guardians may also pick up human clothing, hygiene kits, and social service referrals. The founder and director of the group, Christine Kim, says, quote, "While meeting the medical needs of the animals, we are hoping to also establish trust, build relationships both with the homeless community and with local service providers, and gain a better understanding of what human-animal homelessness looks like in Bloomington," unquote. The event takes place on Sunday. To learn more, including about how to volunteer, visit mydogismyhome.org or send an email to Christine at mydogismyhome.org. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Maria McKinley.
And I'm Don Guerra. Area residents gathered at the Monroe County Public Library last Wednesday for a forum on the resettlement of refugees to Bloomington. Reporter Sarah Vaughn attended the meeting and, as expected, found opposing information and perspectives were plentiful.
Members of the public attending last week's community conversation on the resettlement of refugees witnessed another heated discussion on the topic. The forum was organized by grassroots conservatives and moderated by Josh Wolf of the Monroe County Public Library. Guest speakers were James Simpson, an economist turned journalist and author, Dan Barnett, a fellow from the Center for Immigration Studies, and local immigration lawyer Christy Popp. Early in the conversation, Pop described the general selection process for refugees and talked about who gets priority.
It's important to know that the refugees that we're talking about who are coming to the United States are going through a very different process. They are not entering Europe. They are going to live in refugee camps for very long periods of time, often 3 to 5 years, or they're living in cities. They have been the United Nations Refugee Agency, the High Commission on Refugees, has vetted them thoroughly. They've gone through and interviewed them, looked at their documents, and then they determined based on various factors, say whether someone has relatives in the United States or whether they fit into the United States criteria, whether or not they'll come here. And our criteria are we take widows, we take children, we take disabled persons, we take families. We don't usually take anybody else, though there are some instances where we will take somebody else in a different category. So the United Nations knows this, and they pick those people. The United Nations is not picking who is coming here. They're setting the first guideline. Then the United States goes through their vetting process, and that's usually another two-year process to do the thorough background checks.
Simpson interjected that President Obama has shortened review processes to 3 months for immigrants coming from the Middle East. As members of the audience posed questions for the panelists, Simpson fueled the Islamophobia some audience members were already expressing.
There is a component of the Islamic ideology, especially when it regards to people who are hardcore practitioners of Sharia, where it's an ideology of domination. And as the population grows, that ideology grows. And as that ideology grows, those people become more surly, they become more pushy, they become more demanding.
Pop refuted the idea that the U.S. will be threatened by Sharia law. Saying many of her clients were Muslim, Pop tried to provide some insight.
First of all, just because you're Muslim doesn't mean that you follow Sharia law. Sharia, as my understanding, is both a moral and a legal code. It is similar to halakha in Judaism and canon law in Catholicism. Some countries put Sharia law into their legal codes, but for a Muslim, it is a way of life. It's the path that they are to follow. It is the way it commands whether they eat pork or whether they drink alcohol. There's also courts dealing with marriage, and they have that in Judaism as well. There's this idea that refugees are going to come in here and they're going to impose Sharia law, and we're all going to be just terribly, you know, oppressed by the Muslim minority that's coming in. I really hope that you can see through that, because that is not logical. There were Muslims here at the founding of our country. There have always been Muslims here. We have a constitution. We have a set of laws. Sharia is a religious law that binds only Muslims, and how they interpret it is dependent upon their own faith. Many of my Muslim clients would not even say that they are religious. They might eat pork. They might not fast in Ramadan, or they might wear hijab. Everybody is different, and it's their own personal way of interpreting this. It is not anything that we should fear.
Although it's been reported that the 20 families expected to settle in Bloomington will be from Syria, Pop says that actually may not be the case.
We're talking about taking 20 families in here in Bloomington, and of those 20, maybe half will be Syrians, if that many.
One audience member, along with Simpson and Barnett, expressed concern the refugees would strain public assistance programs. Simpson cited a longitudinal study from the think tank Migration Policy Institute. Simpson said the study concluded that even after 20 years in the country, the number of refugees on public assistance was higher than U.S. citizens. Pop acknowledged most refugees would likely end up working minimum wage jobs and suggested raising the minimum wage could be a tool for getting both refugees and U.S. citizens off of welfare. Another audience member, who did not give her name, voiced concern about the demand refugees could present for medical and educational institutions. She specifically pointed to stories of immigrant men who would not be treated by female medical personnel and the extra attention foreign students would require from the school system. Simpson provided scenarios from cities in Texas and Massachusetts as examples of the potential negative outcomes for Bloomington. But Pop said Bloomington is uniquely set up for refugees and cited the existing multinational community that's associated with Indiana University. Pop said the police, hospitals, and even Monroe County Community School Corporation already have systems in place to deal with people from other cultures. Another audience member, who did not give her name, asked why the general public wasn't asked for input on bringing refugees to Bloomington before the decision was made. Pop, who says she is not affiliated with sponsoring organization Exodus, said the nonprofit's actions and intentions were transparent. Pop said more than one city official, as well as local nonprofits, had gotten on board over the course of multiple meetings. Rashid Mighty, a 40-year resident of the U.S. and a Muslim, said he understood the concerns of area residents. But he said U.S. involvement in other countries contributes to the flight of refugees in the first place.
If we don't allow, we don't give a right to those refugees to come here, who give us right to go there in the first place, to bomb, to destabilize those people, and to make them run from their home?
Barnett, Simpson, and Pop could agree on the fact that the U.S. contributed to destabilizing the Middle East, but Barnett questioned what the appropriate response should be.
I would say most of the refugees that come over, they're coming over from Bhutan, they're coming over from Burma, they're coming over from Somalia. We had almost zero impact. We did not cause issues in Bhutan. We did not cause issues in Burma. And we do have a responsibility in the Middle East. We should help. What is the effective response? Bringing some over and putting them on welfare, or helping perhaps, you know, 100 times more where they are in a region that's culturally comfortable to them is more effective, in my opinion.
Pop replied,
I think that heightens our obligation to help people. And yes, I also agree with the sentiment that a few bad apples spoil the whole bunch. The refugees that are seeking to come here are not just Syrians. We're talking about there may be people from all over the world, and they've suffered in ways we can't imagine. So the risk of harm to us is very minimal. The risk of harm to them staying in their refugee camps is great, and I think that in the balance, we should help them.
Barbara Day, Chief of Refugee Admissions with the U.S. State Department, was originally on the slate of speakers but was absent, leaving Pop the only panelist voicing support for refugee resettlement. An audience member pointed this out, saying she wished the panel and conversation could have been more balanced. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
The organization Exodus Refugee Immigration is opening an office in Bloomington in the spring of next year and will help resettle families in the Bloomington area. The organization is seeking volunteers. More information is available at exodusrefugeeimmigration.org.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially individuals with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information is available at 812-332-2168 or online at inscap.org.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, I'm Babette Ballinger, and I'm here representing SCORE. SCORE stands for the Senior Corps of Retired Business Executives, and we're a branch of the Small Business Association, the SBA. We're probably one of the best secret weapons that Bloomington has because we offer totally free business services to the entire community, for profit or non-for-profit, and helping you to begin and start whatever kind of business you want, to grow the business that you have that's existing, to help you with your concept, with your marketing, and to help you with your finance. If you need a business plan, we're here to help. It's absolutely one of the greatest free services that a business could ever use. I got involved with SCORE. I'm new to Bloomington. And about 5 years ago, when I retired from my garment industry business in New York, I decided I wanted to give back to the community and got involved with SCORE. When I realized the amount of impact that we could have on small businesses and on our community, I absolutely felt fabulous. And when I moved to Bloomington, the first thing I did was call Bloomington SCORE. Bloomington SCORE has people with experience in small retail businesses and larger wholesale and retail businesses. We have people who are experienced in businesses as diverse as starting restaurants, plumbing, electrical, across the board. We have 22 volunteers. Okay, one of my favorite SCORE stories is that we had a woman who owned a series of Radio Shacks that all went under during the recession. She was making granola bars for her husband, who was working in a local call center. All of a sudden, everybody kept asking for more bars and loved them, and she came to us and said, "What do I do?" We took her week by week by week through figuring out how to package her granola bars, how to name her company, how to get all the rules for food, finding kitchens to make bars in. And at the end of our sojourn with her, Lola Granola had a $2 million business. So there's no limit to what we can help you with and what you can do. It just requires your time, your dedication, and a phone call to SCORE Bloomington. Thanks for listening. I'm Babette Ballinger from Bloomington SCORE. You can find us at www.score.org.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three ways to engage in your community as a skilled volunteer. Bloomington SCORE helps local businesses by assigning volunteer mentors who have retired or are near retirement with years of experience in their business field to counsel new entrepreneurs to success. Mentors give a few hours a month in pairs, sharing their experience, meeting clients, and providing counseling. The Monroe County Public Library's newest spaces, the Ground Floor and Level Up, are the popular Teen Space and Digital Creativity Center. You are invited to share your skills and mentor teens in these spaces. Mentors will hang out, mess around, and geek out with local teens, assisting, encouraging, and motivating them in projects that teach 21st century literacy skills. Or if you have a knack for fixing things, you can lend your skills to Monroe County United Ministries and add life to their buildings and equipment while assisting the staff with regular facilities upkeep as a member of the maintenance team that keeps their programs functioning. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
This has been the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jared Dill and Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, our partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Sarah Hetrick. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programs, online at wfhb.org.
You can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.